What is going on, crypto family? So today we got the super impressive William Quigley. He is the CEO of Wax. This dude has done a ton of stuff in and outside of the blockchain space and plans to bring a bunch of real-world adoption to blockchain via Wax. You know, we have a great conversation on tons of different pain points of crypto and why it's so hard to get people into it, as well as how he plans to solve it, right? So that's pretty freaking cool. It's really a great conversation that everybody, I think, can really benefit from. So I recommend that you stay all the way through and even hear about his encounter with a great white shark. That's right, his encounter with a great white shark. So sounds pretty freaking terrifying, but I'll let you hear for yourself. So let's go meet William, and I'll catch you on the other side. What is going on, crypto family? So today we got William Quigley. He is the CEO of Wax, Worldwide Asset Exchange. One impressive dude. You know, he actually has an MBA from Harvard. He's actually, I think, a classically trained like CPA. He has his Bachelor's of Science, if I remember right, from the University of Southern California. He helped build Tether. He helped build GoChain. He helped build MasterCoin. So all kinds of incredible stuff. And so, William, I really appreciate you taking time for us, and I can't wait to pick your brain and hear about all the cool stuff that you're doing and how you got into the space.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I've been in the tech space since basically the dawn of the consumer internet. So the first venture capital firm I co-founded with my partners was something called Idea Lab Capital Partners. And that was the first consumer internet-focused venture capital fund. And one of the things I always mention to people who are in the crypto space, blockchain space, is for like the first couple of years of building out our Idea Lab Capital Partners, this consumer internet-focused venture capital fund, all we heard generally was these internet companies aren't real companies. They don't make money. They don't own anything. They're just based on how people feel about them. How will you ever make any money by owning them? Blah, blah, blah. And a lot of what I heard in the first couple of years, even today to some extent, about blockchain mirrors what I heard about internet and, you know, in the 90s. So I think we're in good company.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And that is one serious piece of hardware behind you. What video game is that from? It looks like you could pick somebody off from a mile away.
Yeah, that's CSGO, which is Counter-Strike Global Offensive. That is a skin for, they're like, sniper rifle. They call it a Dragon Lore. But awesome. That one probably cost $20,000.
That is incredible.
Not the actual rifle. Yeah,
I know. That's crazy. Just for a video game, just to, you know, change the appearance of it or whatnot. Somebody's willing to pay $20,000. That is incredible. But what's incredible is, I mean, you're kind of like a classically trained CPA that got into blockchain. How does that happen?
So I started my career at a place called Arthur Andersen, which is no more. It died, I think, after they got sued for a couple of failed audits. But it was a giant company and a great place to learn about how to evaluate a business. You know, got trained there and then went on to the Walt Disney Company, where I was managing the licensees, the people that Disney would grant licenses to build stuff. Thousands and thousands of small companies making, you know, t-shirts, waffle irons, watches. So I learned about how these small companies were able to grow as long as they had capital. And right around that time, the Mosaic browser came out, and then the Netscape browser came out. And when I saw the Netscape browser, I was like, wow, you know, it's going to be a lot easier to sit on top of this thing called internet, and probably a lot of companies are going to get built. So I partnered up with some guys who raised a fund, and we started investing in a lot of internet, like 1.0 companies. You know, most of the early ones were e-commerce. And then as we built out these e-commerce companies, we realized, wait a minute, no one comes to these e-commerce companies without eyeballs and marketing. So we started investing in marketing companies. And then we realized that, well, that's great, but how the hell are they going to pay for anything? At the time, it was so difficult to get a credit card on for an internet-based business. All these payment problems and fiat problems you have with crypto, those happen just like the same way with the internet. And so then we were the first investors in PayPal, and PayPal was a real gift to the e-commerce community, because it was very hard to become a credit card merchant. Even if you could become a credit card merchant, you might have to pay 14% of the transaction value. And everybody thought it was on the internet. It was, had to be fraudulent. And so we've come a long way. But what that experience taught me was this notion that you need a bunch of layers in order to make a real industry thrive. Like, you had the internet, but that had no value because you didn't have a way for people to connect to it. So then you get a browser. Now people can connect to it, but what are they going to do with it? Well, maybe e-commerce sites or content sites. But then how do those guys make money? So you need payments and you need marketing. A lot of what I've just talked about is how we look at blockchain right now as well. It's one of the reasons we did Wax, because we could see this one layer, the blockchain layer, doing pretty good, not great. Transaction speed's not fast enough, and it's still difficult to connect to it. But we could see that layer is going to start to get built enough to where it's workable. What are all the other things we need to add? And so, that's how we looked at Wax, just taking an existing business we have called Opskins that allows people to buy and sell virtual items, things like, CSGO virtual items or regular, think of them like as emojis for people who don't play a lot of video games. But this business, video game virtual item business, they're also called skins, is about $100 billion a year business. It's roughly 2/3 of all the revenue the global video game businesses make a year, which is probably $150 billion in 2019. $100 billion of that $150 billion is virtual items. And by the way, these virtual items have a lot of properties that are very similar to blockchain-based items. Some that are radically different, but the idea of once somebody gets it, they can't get it. When you send it, you can't get it back. They can be used as a store of value. People love to trade them. There's scarcity involved. The more scarce often, the more valuable. So very similar to blockchain with one giant exception, that being there's maybe 500 or 600 million people in the world who like to trade virtual items connected to video games. And there's a very, very, very small number of people who like to do the same thing with blockchain. And we can talk more about, why.
Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of opportunity out there for sure. And it sounds like you guys are doing a great job of cornering the market with the virtual, assets out there as far as for video games. And who would have thought that people would pay, $20,000 plus, just to change, the way their gun looks or something like that on a video game. And they can't even take it from that video game to another video game yet, right?
True.
It's just,
That is a big problem. I will tell you this though. Long ago, I lost my awe and surprise about what people would pay for a skin, like a wrapper on an item, a digital item. And that's because it became evident to me that that's how we are as humans. You don't really need more than like one pair of shoes. So why does everybody have 50 pairs of shoes? Well, because they want to look stylish. Everybody could have white or black t-shirts, but we have like infinitely different types of t-shirts. The way you dress, the jewelry, the watches, the rings, the way you decorate your house. Most of these things are purely of an aesthetic nature. They don't make your house better to have a nice rug. It just, you find it appealing by the way it looks. So we probably shouldn't be a surprise that people would like to pay lots of money to dress up their avatar in a video game, because they do the same thing in real life. And many people spend hours a day in these virtual environments. So it's an important place for them socially. And that's one of the reasons why they, style and fashion are important. And of course, that's starting to come with blockchain-based video games and what we call NFTs, non-fungible tokens. You know, it's starting, but we still need a lot of help in allowing people to really easily get those items, you know, buy them and trade them and view them. Just those simple things, you know, try to do that with most blockchain-based NFTs. It's very hard.
Yeah. And a lot of great points there too. I mean, as far as, you know, not just the vanity of people, but when you're spending that much time playing video games, you kind of, I guess, want to represent yourself the way that you are or the way that you would want to be to this digital community or this virtual community. I actually know a guy that owns a rather large corporation, and one of his lead guys quit. And he quit not because he wasn't happy with the job or any of that stuff, but because it was cutting into his video gaming. So he wasn't able to spend enough time versus programming, right? He's like, you know, I'm building too much stuff. I'm not having enough me time. I need to spend more time with my video games. And the dude left, you know, a very well-paying job to go back to video gaming. It's pretty incredible. So I see what you're
saying. Being in this industry, I can tell you, I understand it. There are a lot of people who feel that way.
Yeah, it's incredible. But you guys are taking it a step further. So not only do you guys have your exchange, this marketplace where people can, you know, swap skins or buy skins and sell skins and all that kind of stuff, you guys are actually creating your own blockchain. So you're like, you know what? This stuff isn't working well enough for us. We're just going to do it ourselves. So
that's exactly right. And, you know, when we first said to people we were going to build a blockchain, it was news to me, by the way. I was in both worlds, the video gaming world and the blockchain world. But I didn't realize how distinct they were. Very few people in video gaming know anything about blockchain, and very few people in blockchain know anything about video gaming, even though demographically they look very similar, the two camps, but they're not. And so when I explained this is what we're building, a lot of people kind of knee-jerk said, well, why don't you use Ethereum, or, you know, why don't you use Bitcoin or some other chain? And you know, we then explained to them, you know, guys, those platforms have not been purpose-built for the buying and selling of digital goods or displaying of those digital goods. And we're using these platforms. Like, we were the second largest investor in the Ethereum crowd sale. Now, we like Ethereum, but it's a general purpose blockchain. It is not a purpose-built one. And when you, as people see more and more of what we are doing with WAX, I think they'll really get it. And by the way, before we had WAX, we were using the Ethereum blockchain for tokenized skins, you know, virtual items that were sort of inspired by video gaming. And it almost put us out of business. In June of last year, 2018, you might recall Ethereum hit a major point of congestion. And the way Ethereum deals with congestion is the way Uber deals with congestion. It raises the prices. And so we went from paying like, and it was like 25 cents or some around there. It was 50 cents to create the virtual item smart contract. And it took about 90 seconds to create it and send it. And we went from that to it taking about 17 hours to create the virtual item and about $45, $50 to create it. And that was because of congestion. So we just instantly were in a position of losing tons of money. And after a few days of this, I told my team, if we don't launch like our alpha version of the WAX blockchain and just shift all of our NFT creation to the WAX blockchain, we're not going to be in business. So we put out a pre-alpha version of WAX. But what I can tell you is it was so satisfying to our developers, because building on this new WAX, even though it was an alpha state, as opposed to on the Ethereum blockchain, which was pretty clumsy to work on, and of course very slow, it was a night and day experience. And even though I'm a big fan of what Ethereum has done, I would say as a proof of work blockchain and as a generic blockchain designed for no specific thing, I don't think it's a viable solution for a commercially scalable product or service like ours. It's just not ready.
Gotcha.
Speed, of course, has been front and center with everybody. Speed and cost, right? That's the two. Those are the two things people have been talking about with blockchain for several years. And we're getting there. We use DPoS as our consensus mechanism, delegated proof of stake. And I can say it's not as fast as I'd like, but it's pretty fast. It's, 100, 150 transactions a second. And that's like reliably. You'll hear different people say, it can do 1,000 transactions a second. But I mean, reliably, it's probably still 200 transactions a second. But that's a heck of a lot better than 10, which is what Bitcoin and Ethereum have been at.
Gotcha. And did you basically make this from scratch, or is this a fork of like EOS or something else?
We took the DPoS consensus mechanism from EOS, and we took other parts of other chains, things that we thought were done well. We glued it together. We did make smart contracts on EOS compatible with WAX, which is very helpful. And WAX contracts are compatible on EOS. I think that's really valuable because you get sort of a network effect, because EOS has done a pretty good job of bringing a lot of smart developers. And I don't think it yet has the quantity of dApps that would make it like where it needs to be, but it's getting there. So what we did is we looked at some of the subjective things that EOS did, for instance, in governance and voting. So EOS has failed really on the governance side. I would say on the voting side as well, for a number of reasons that I can simplify here, but one is, of course, Scatter is a nice attempt, but it's by no means, it's certainly not the Netscape Navigator of Internet 1.0. It's not even there yet. It's not even Mosaic in terms of browsers. It's difficult. Part of that difficulty is kind of rooted in just the difficulty of working with blockchains, and part is just the UI is primitive. If you want to vote for things like for block producers on EOS, or you want to vote for proposals to change the blockchain, you've got to use Scatter and you have to stake your tokens. Staking is hard. Voting is difficult. And there's no incentive given to the community for bothering to vote or for bothering to stake. We thought that was a mistake. So we put staking rewards for people who do decide to both stake their tokens and vote their tokens. And I think that is something that probably in retrospect, the guys who built EOS from Block One probably would say is an improvement. We did a few other things because we were talking to the senior engineering team in EOS right after EOS launched. They left. And they formed a company that's focused on enterprise using primarily EOS as a platform. We consulted a lot with them about what would you do differently, in terms of governance and rewards and whatnot. So I think we've made a better solution than EOS. And EOS is a good bar to set because it is the biggest blockchain from a transaction standpoint. More transaction volume on EOS than Ethereum by probably a factor of, 5 to 1. Part of that, again, because it's faster, it's cheaper. Mistakes that EOS made it also include, there's no way for you to open up an account on EOS if you're a consumer. There's no way you can do it. You have to ask somebody who already has an account to loan you some EOS and create an account and then gift it to you. And, they're trying to...
Here we come.
Yeah, and you could argue, I could see how somebody might say, oh, that's a good idea because, it's kind of building community and whatnot. But, of course, I like to say that consumers pray to the god of convenience. Everything with consumers is about convenience, no matter what it is. They will take the inferior product to the superior product, if the inferior product is more convenient. They'll take the more expensive product, the product that's less reliable, the product that's secure, less safe. it really doesn't matter. Consumers will always go the route of convenience over inconvenience. And of course, this is a global problem for anyone in blockchain. It's a hell of a lot easier to download a Google app or an Apple App Store app than it is to get on a dApp on any blockchain. And this is the principal area that my partners and I at Wax have decided to focus on. Make it very, very similar to being on a regular app. Make it that simple when it comes to being on a blockchain-based app, or, you know, dApp as we call them. Which is why if you sign on to the Wax blockchain, you can sign on with your Google credentials, your Facebook credentials, your Steam credentials, and soon many, many more. We're giving that ability that it's called OAuth in the tech vernacular, but this ability to incorporate in your dApp account creation sign on that's very similar to what people see in the web world or in the app world. We've also done a lot of other really cool stuff that we borrowed from our company, Opskins. Something that I think is going to become increasingly valuable, which is scoring blockchain accounts. So today, very few blockchains even have many people with accounts on them. And many of the accounts that are on blockchains are bots or they're duplicates. So we decided, you know, we should give create an ability for those accounts to be scored. So with on the Wax blockchain, you'll be able to tell one score kind of gives you a probabilistic interpretation of is it a bot or is it a real person? Is this an account that actually engages with many dApps or never done on a dApp? And if you're doing airdrops, for instance, as a dApp, you might want to forget about the bots, forget about the inactive accounts, and just hit the accounts that have tended to maybe play dApp-based games. And so those sorts of things, I think, will make it easier for enterprising developers to actually create viable businesses, viable dApps on the blockchain. Trading items, right? Ask anybody, like, how would you send an NFT or even a regular crypto asset, a Bitcoin, ETH, or whatever, to another person who doesn't have an account, who doesn't even know what crypto is? You'd probably say, I have no idea. You know, so we solve that. You can send these items through your phone. And the recipient, when they grab that object, they get an instant account on the Wax blockchain, which they can, if they then want to, put personal identifying information on, which could ultimately lead to that account being KYC, if that's what the individual who owns the account wants, so that they can do things like use fiat, because a lot of people still want to use fiat. You know, a world where you exclusively use cryptos is, I think, a pretty small market. So we're trying to bring in the ability for crypto to also work hand in hand with blockchain-based tokens and other assets.
No, it's incredible. I mean, everything you just mentioned right there, you just nailed it on so many different pain points. So it's obvious to me that you guys have done your research, right? So,
oh yeah,
a ton of focus groups. You guys have probably, you know, really researched to see what the pain points are, how to address them, you know, and then basically how to create your own entire blockchain and ecosystem to address everything. So that's pretty remarkable. Where are you guys at now with all of this? I mean, how soon before people will actually be able to, you know, everything we just discussed actually use?
Sure. So Wax is today, it's an ERC-20 token, because when we did our token generation event back in 2017, now we did what a lot of people did. We used Ethereum. That Wax token, ERC-20, is now being retired, and you can convert that Wax token, ERC-20, into the Wax protocol token. And we began the token swap process in June 30th, so a few weeks ago, and it'll continue through the end of August. So anyone who has WAX tokens, the ERC-20s will be converting them into the WAX protocol tokens. And the layer that then sits on top of WAX, which we call the WAX service layer, that has APIs for developers to be able to, as I mentioned, have this integrated OAuth service where people can use traditional credentialing services like Google sign-in and Facebook sign-in, a WAX account so that people can really easily trade the items, WAX Marketplace so people can have their own WAX Marketplace, WAX Seller Central where they can sell items. All of these services, and there's a ton of them, are going to be available. They'll be rolled out over time, but in mid-September, you'll have the first microservices available, which I think is going to be, it'll be really useful for, as I said, any DApp that wants just to make things super easy for the consumers. That'll begin in September, and over some period of months, we'll be rolling out all of the these services in what'll be a developer portal. So you'll have the API to use that service, the API documentation, tutorials, case studies, all the things we've come to expect in traditional software. We're going to have that in the WAX portal. And I think it'll be quite well received by any DApps, because it's like the, you know, when you're subject to the tyranny of MetaMask or Scatter, you know, come on, you try to get the typical consumer to play your cool blockchain-based game, but they've got to deal with MetaMask or with Scatter, and they need to pay in tokens, and you know, the things crash all the time. I've been in the consumer space for virtually my entire career. It's just, there's just no way. You know, if all you look at this space from is one point of view, convenience, you would say blockchain basically fails in every respect, right? Just, it's
agreed.
Not easy. It's intimidating. It's slow. You got to decide what fee to pay in order to expedite your transaction. I mean, it's just, it's not scalable. So, yeah, we have literally taken all of our experience over 20 years of a video game item trading. My partner, Jonathan, he literally invented the concept of buying in-game virtual items for money, for real-world money, and then trading them. He did that on Ultima Online, a video game from the 90s. And we've always seen how when we make things easy, it's just way easier to sell people on the concept. You know, we've been at this now for, you know, a year and a half. I'm super excited for people to see the service layer. And I suspect many other blockchains, when they see it, will probably go, oh, that's a much easier way to deal with things. I mean, it's because this is how developers work now. Everyone is used to an API environment where they don't have to recreate all this stuff. You know, for instance, in virtually every piece of software and certainly every video game, there's a random number generator, an RNG, random number generator. They're really, really important in everything. If you downloaded Spotify, there's a random number generator in there to do the shuffle, the mix-up of the songs. And yet, we had never seen a random number generator built natively onto a blockchain. We did that with the WAX protocol. We put it on there. Now the way it works, by the way, is if you're a DApp and you need an RNG, you go and have to create one. You probably have to do an Oracle where you grab something from off-chain. And how do you then, because you built it, you probably built it for the first time, and every other DApp, and there's thousands of them, have their own random number generators. How are you, as a consumer, going to know, are these provably fair? Are these actually like real random numbers? That is screaming for like one like standard for everybody to use. And so that's what we did with WEX. We put a random number generator smart contract. Now, when you're a dApp, when you need random numbers, you will literally just tap into that API. Every single rendered result from that random number generator gets written to the blockchain. So you just look at the blockchain to see the number pattern. And by the way, what you should see is there's about 10% of the numbers are zeros, 10% are ones, 10% are twos, da 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 da, right? It should be evenly distributed. And so that to us was basic and obvious and a very good application for a blockchain, and something that if you built on the WEX blockchain, you don't need to build yourselves. So what I would like in the blockchain industry, in the crypto industry, going forward is I would like more people who are thinking about real world use cases, things that people need to do that the blockchain is ideal for. And by the way, I believe the vast majority of things a blockchain is not good for, right? Not virtually everything is better centralized. But there are those things that are better decentralized and better done on a blockchain. And when you do those on a blockchain, the alternative way has no peer to it. And so this is another thing we keep looking at is what are the things we see where the blockchain is an ideal solution for. The buying and selling of virtual items was obvious because the people who trade these items, a lot of what they do looks a lot like how people interact with regular crypto items. It's also global and therefore cross-border. So we spend a lot of our time on cross-border payments. And there is a massive amount of, I call it a tax, a global tax on consumers and businesses for the buying and selling of things cross-border. A lot of people focus on like the fees payment companies charge you. That is a sideshow. Those stipulated fees that everybody focuses on, the biggest piece is currency conversion. That's probably $1 trillion per year. That certain companies, tiny amount of companies, that governments have bequeathed as you guys are the money transmitters, you guys are allowed to do Forex, those companies, in one shape or another, capture $1 trillion of currency conversion, VIG. And so, of course, this is also where things like Bitcoin and just traditional crypto is so fantastic. It's why one of the reasons why Facebook thinks Libra is so great. Remember, the vast majority of their consumers are outside of the U.S. So having one universal currency that doesn't have to be converted and therefore have this big currency conversion cost, avoiding that is very nice. You know, I want people other than Facebook to be doing it, but the concept is great. That was the reason we did Tether in the first place, because we could see, wow, this fiat, using fiat cross-border is really expensive and slow.
So many great points here. And another great one too, obviously, is with the ownership of all these different skins, using blockchain actually proves that you own it. So that's something.
Yeah, I mean, to anyone who's ever spent a lot of money, and there are, like I said, hundreds of millions of people who buy virtual items in game, they know that kind of sucks. You don't own them. They're considered a license. They're not yours. Of course, as you mentioned earlier, they only work in that game. If that game shuts down, you lose the item. And almost always that company greatly restricts your ability to transfer it. And it's a crazy thing when you think about it. Most companies on earth, when you buy the physical item, what do they say about you reselling it? They say nothing. You know why? Because they can't stop you. You got a Rolex watch, sell it. You got an iPhone, sell it. How about buying a house or a car? Can you imagine if General Motors said, you can't resell your car? They could say that. They could make you sign a term of service, but I guarantee you would buy very few cars, right? You just wouldn't. Trying to explain to the video game world, I've been doing it for many years, that when you allow people who buy something in the primary market to sell it in a secondary market, you actually grow the primary market. Does anybody doubt that the fact that you can buy a house and resell it means more people are in the market for buying homes? because they don't have to worry about the, oh, what happens if I don't like living here? Well, you can never move. You can never sell your house. So, but because, I really think it's because with digital items, you can restrict them from being bought and sold. Most companies have chosen to go that way. This is one of the promises of blockchain-based video games. Those non-fungible tokens, those NFTs you buy, you're going to own, and you'll be able to trade. And trading is a huge part of video gaming when it's allowed. There's that communal experience. And humans have been trading since they formed societies. So, of course, blockchain is very good for that when it gets to be, you know, at scale, which enough chains now can allow you to trade things at scale. It's very good for that because, as we talked about, the ownership claim is it's a bearer instrument. Whoever owns the item, possesses the item, also owns it. And so I believe it's not going to happen soon, but eventually traditional video game companies will go this route. At the beginning, it's going to be brand new companies who are just looking at the technology and saying, all right, let's give it a try. 5 years, maybe, as people get used to owning these items in the blockchain world, I think they'll demand it in the traditional video game world.
Yeah, it would be incredible too. I mean, if there was some kind of interoperability within all these skins and assets, but it's too difficult, I think, you know, probably for all these different video game developers to allow you to put your digital asset in this game and that game and the other game and somehow code it all
in. Yes, it would be super cool. I agree with you, which is why I think it's going to happen. And yeah, it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult in the sense that it would take a lot of coordination. Now, Unity is a game development platform, particularly for mobile games, that lots of people use. So you could say, well, you have a common development platform. That's a really good start. And then the next difficulty would be more on the human level, not the technological level, which is getting these video game companies to be comfortable with what's basically a modification of their business model. Instead of being the exclusive seller of skins or virtual items in their game environment, you can kind of bring your own in. I do think the business models will evolve that way, and I think they will be even more profitable for the companies. But it is a scary thing for companies to mess around with their existing business model, which is why you're seeing hesitation for them to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Google, they make up like 80% of all the phones, right? You look at Apple, they make up, you know, 15, 20%. You got one that's closed, you got one that's open to everybody. So, you know, you would think that they would start taking that mindset. In the U.S., Apple's very prominent, but outside of the U.S., it's not.
So. Yeah, exactly right, because price points, right? The Android operating system, since it's open source, is something that, you know, someone, an Indian developer, Chinese developers, they can go, they can build these phones much cheaper. You know, they're not iPhone in terms of their luxury-like capabilities, but they work. Sure. I would say Android is, God, it's almost at peer level now with the iOS operating system. That's pretty close. The business model issues are probably the bigger issues here, which is why you're seeing brand new companies, blockchain-based companies, initially be the ones to experiment because they don't have a big business to worry about disrupting.
Right. Gotcha. And then all the cool stuff that we talked about, you know, as far as the timelines for it, I think you have a new white paper coming out. Is it going to kind of break everything down for us there?
Yeah. So the original WAX white paper came out, I think it was September of 2017. And so I would say in a few weeks, probably before December, probably in August, we're going to come out with the new white paper for the WAX protocol token, which will talk a lot about the service layer I went into and some of our philosophies about how to get blockchain-based dApps to get mass market appeal and adoption using some of these, you know, more consumer-friendly elements that just don't exist yet in the blockchain world.
Yeah, you had so many great points when you're talking about just the pain points that everybody has to go through to use blockchain, and that's why nobody uses blockchain, right? So,
yeah, I mean, exactly. You've got a hardcore group of people who love it, but they've taken the time to invest, you know, into the know-how, into the processes. But, you know, blockchain's complicated. Even like delegated proof of stake, which is something we use, which I really like versus proof of work, it's incumbent on the community using that blockchain to vote, because there are delegates, to vote on who's going to be running the equivalent of miners. We call them guilds, but they're, EOS calls it block producer, but it's the little data centers running the blockchain. The way delegated proof of stake works is you vote on those people, so there's like, it's active engagement, more so than centralized applications, which of course, those are very convenient because they run the whole tech stack. They don't ask for your opinion. But in a decentralized environment, there is no central authority, so the community has to dictate what happens. Sure. And while that's cool, it's not as convenient of just saying, I'll just use whatever you're going to give me.
True. But, you know, with like Opskins and all the stuff that you're doing in the gaming world, you're kind of adding a layer of gamification and rewards to this as well, to where people
that is true.
Participate.
Yeah. You touched on how do you get people then to get engaged? Well, one is you reward them. One, they're rewarded by the fact that if they do have a strong opinion about something, they can vote for that thing. But also, they get tokens. They get tokens for the act of the work that they're doing, researching who's the best guild, or what update is best. We're also rolling out something I'm super excited about, which is a worker proposal system. There will be a WAX worker proposal system that will allow anybody who believes that they could build something, a tool or a dApp or any sort of piece of technology that could enhance the WAX blockchain, they can submit a proposal and it gets voted on. And if it gets voted on, you get paid. You, the developer, will get paid. And all of those, how much you get paid for what type of work and the voting protocol is being finalized now. But that will launch, I hope, in 30 days. And that's going to be really helpful because there are so many super talented developers who have ideas. And if they had a small financial incentive, they would go and build that stuff for a particular blockchain. So that is something I really like about the open source movement. It's what I like about blockchain, is harnessing the creative and technical brilliance of a global community of people to build on the platform you create.
That's
cool.
It is, and you basically solved one of Bitcoin's problems. I'm not sure, obviously you're probably familiar with it, but the Bitcoin Improvement Protocol, right? So BIPs, when you want to basically say, hey, look, guys, I got this idea. Here's all the stuff that I've done. It's going to fix Bitcoin. You can vote on it. Even if they implement it, there's no reward mechanism, right? So there's no incentive for them to do it other than out of the goodness of their heart.
The Bitcoin blockchain governance model and incentive system, I mean, it's spectacular for what it was designed to do, to create and operate this decentralized platform for the storing of digital items. It's great. But we can see now, 10 years in, we see the growing pains, we see the forks, and it's not perfect. So we're always trying to, like, how can we modify it? We haven't seen the end. I'm sure WAX will look very different in 5 years than it looks now, but it is an improvement in terms of operating real businesses on top of it.
Gotcha. So more about yourself. So, I mean, obviously a super successful guy. You've probably read a ton of books. What's one that kind of sticks out to you the most? Is something that kind of shaped your life or something you recommend other people's, read as well?
I'm a libertarian, and I look a lot at how self-organizing communities can bring things together. When I left Harvard, I did a 2-year fellowship in that very specific area. It was called the Kauffman Fellowship, and it was about how communities can become self-sustaining. That's what got me interested in venture capital, by the way, because one of the things that I saw in every community that seemed to be self-sustaining and thriving, it had access to capital, and it drove me there. Blockchain has some very similar elements to what I had studied, and I've sort of decided that this is where I want to spend the rest of my career, at this intersection of blockchain, virtual items, and global e-commerce, particularly cross-border commerce. That, to me, is the most exciting area in business. We're talking about cross-border is the fastest growing category of this $80 trillion global annual GDP. It's the fastest growing part of it. The fastest growing part of cross-border commerce itself is digital. Digital cross-border commerce is the fastest growing element of global GDP. And so blockchain is a natural obvious, you know, and if we could get more stable coins, then it'll even be better. People will see, wow, one platform to get things done. And then, you know, we at Wax have built dApps as well. We've created what you would call a Tether for consumer products, where we've tokenized consumer products, because many consumer products, think sneakers, are actually now tradable assets. People, you know, if you buy a $5,000 pair of these collectible Air Jordans, you're not going to wear them. You're going to trade them. And so we applied the same thing we did with Tether. And we said, well, what if we, you know, warehouse these sneakers and issued people tokens, Wax tokens, that could be traded and therefore traded anywhere in the world, right? It's very hard to buy, let's say, something on eBay if you're outside of the US, because you get hit with a whole bunch of fees and, you know, costs of getting the item from, you know, wherever it is in the United States over to Germany, if you're a German. You hear a lot about tokenizing real estate, tokenizing stocks, tokenizing commodities. I think in the future, virtually every consumer product will have a digital twin. And that digital twin will be blockchain locked, blockchain based. And you're going to separate possession from ownership, where ownership may be yours and it's somebody else is holding it in escrow. These are the sorts of things I'm seeing and that I'm focused on, call it over the next 10 years.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. I think it's going to be the tokenization of every asset, whether it's a tennis shoe or a building. That's what we're going to end up with. But yeah, I can keep talking blockchain with you all day. But what's more about yourself, man? Like, do you have any hidden talents? You know, you have any kind of skills that, you know, the world doesn't know about? You want to share?
Well, let's see. I'm not far from the beach, from the water in California. So I'm a avid scuba diver. I love the mystery of scuba diving. My favorite place to dive is the Channel Islands, that are islands off the coast of Los Angeles. People are always surprised to hear there's islands off of Los Angeles. Yeah. You know, really cool, beautiful underwater topography. So I take photographs of that stuff. I like doing that. And, I like to read, particularly, you know, about Enlightenment era philosophers. The types of people I've gotten to know in blockchain has really satisfied me. It's people who are thinking about new ways of doing government, you know, new ways of allowing people who can't get access to bank accounts and the financial systems to get access to them. That sort of stuff I have a lot of passion for.
Gotcha.
And of course, I also believe the way you get people interested in stuff is you make it fun, hence my focus on video gaming.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. But as far as the scuba diving, I disagree a little bit there. That's some crazy stuff, man. There, you know, you're at the bottom of the food chain when you get out there in that water. What's some of the craziest stuff that you've seen out there, especially being so close to all those great whites? You got Seal Island out there.
Well, as anyone who dives though will know, the creatures in the ocean are much friendlier than the creatures that roam the land.
Really?
I guarantee you that. Yeah, you're pretty safe. I mean, off the coast of Southern California, you have a lot of the, you know, big pelagic animals. You have different types of sharks, you know, leopard sharks. Rare to ever see a great white. I have seen great whites in Northern California off an island called the Farallon Islands, but I was in a shark cage. it was wonderful.
What was that like?
You know what it did? It cured me. Of when you're scuba diving in Monterey, California, the water's very gray, cold. I do beach diving, so I kick out from the beach. And every once in a while, you start to play the Jaws, like, dun, 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 right? You're like, man, yeah, every once in a while. And so, because you're surface swimming. When I was in that cage off the Farallon Islands, and these are massive female great whites, 20 feet, right? One swam pretty close to my cage, and it cured me of ever worrying about being bitten by a great white in Monterey, because I realized, you know, you kind of hear how big they are, but when you're there, it's like, I'm never even going to feel it. I think it's just going to bite me in half. I don't have to worry about suffering. It's just going to be over. So, yeah. But also off California, you get bat rays, octopus, beautiful squid, beautiful anemones. I mean, just wonderful. It's a temperate zone. It's about 50 to 60 degrees water. So you get a blend of like tropics, but also the colder waters, which tend to provide you bigger but less variety of creatures. Whales, lots of whales off California coast. So yeah, it's a nice place to be and to scuba.
Yeah, I mean, I thought you were going to tell us some beautiful story of how you're not scared of great whites anymore because, you know, you were able to pet them or ride them or they didn't bother you at all. It's like, no, if it comes after me, I won't feel it.
Yeah, it's over.
That's awesome, man. So what's a skill or talent you don't have that you wish you did?
So many. I wish I could paint. No, don't know how to paint very well. Wish I could dance. Don't know how to dance. No, would love to sing. I am in, you know, Hollywood. Lots of very talented people in those areas, but not me.
Gotcha. Last question, man. I always ask people if they had a time machine and they can go forward in time or they can go back in history, but you have to stay there. What point in time and why would you go?
Oh, for me, yeah, I don't know. The future would be cool, but I have a feeling I would be a dinosaur because they'd be like, you don't know anything. So backwards would be more fun. 1750s to 1800, all of the great Enlightenment era philosophers, you know, Edmund Burke, Thomas Paine, you know, the giants of the American independence. Yeah, that definitely would be the time I would go.
Yeah.
And the only thing I would miss would be not having access to anesthesia, right?
Not your smartphone, not the family.
Yeah. Of all the things we've done in the 20th century, that's probably the thing that's we all benefit from more than any other we never think about.
That's pretty incredible. Well, William, I could talk to you all day long, but you know, I got to let you go. I know that you got a ton of stuff to do, and it's been great to, you know, pick your brain and hear all the cool stuff that you've done, the stuff that you're doing. We'll make sure to get the links out for people, man. And yeah, thanks a bunch for making time for us. Really appreciate
it. You're welcome. I really do enjoy sharing what we're trying to do with blockchain.
It's pretty incredible. We're all excited for you. So God bless, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. Huge thanks to William. Really appreciate you, buddy, taking the time for us and telling us about all the cool stuff that you've done and that you plan to do with Wax, not to mention all the stuff you already have done with Wax. So awesome stuff. And don't forget, people that want to come to World Crypto Conference in Las Vegas, make sure you guys buy your tickets now. They go up every single month. There are no discounts. There are no freebies. But for people that do buy, make sure you shoot me an email at cryptobeatles@gmail.com. Let me know that you bought. We'll enter you into the drawing to where you can come hang out with us. We have an after party there. It's going to be a great time. Lots of really cool people. Don't want to miss it. It's going to be awesome. Very, very small. So, and of course, I don't get paid for saying any of this stuff. It's just for the community, just for you. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be great. Just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beatles shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beatles and his guests. Robert Beatles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of TradingView Sessions, Crypto Beatles on YouTube, and owns several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beatles is not a financial expert or advisor.
Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money. So always trade at your own risk. Please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. All right. God bless you. Love you. Till the next one. Talk to you soon.